From round the corner
to your street and neighbourhood.
This is Dave for Breakfast.
Triple M Breakfast.
G'day, Dave Pennant here for your brekkie catch-up. This week, I welcomed special guests Dorothy Crosby, Counsellor for Rural Aid for a Wellbeing Check, Associate Professor Nick Callow from Centre for Water and Spatial Science at UWA, and we chatted about a new WaterCorp initiative for dam evaporation, plus another great recipe from Narrogin CWA Belle, Lucy Gibson, this time for an idea of a savoury dinner. Hope you enjoy.
It's Triple M Breakfast.
Getting your day going and feeling good.
This is Dave for Breakfast.
It's absolute a pleasure to welcome in from Rural Aid, Dorothy Crosby. Good morning to you, Dorothy.
Hello, Dave. Nice to be with you.
It's an absolute pleasure, like I said, to have you with us again. Having a look at the importance of well-being when things are not so well.
Yes. It's a very important topic. In our life, well-being is a bit of a buzzword and, you'll see lots of references to well-being. But a lot of us actually don't know how to sustain our well-being, the longevity of our well-being. If everything's going okay, we might not even think about it. But I would like to invite listeners to be a little bit more intentional about their well-being.
How realistic is it to have a happy all the time attitude? Is it pretty realistic?
I think a lot of us want it to be because we think when we're happy, that's the ultimate fulfillment, that we're successful if we're happy all the time. And if you like, a bit of a social construct that happiness equals I'm doing well and I'm fine. But then the mistake happens when something hard and tough happens in our life and we're not happy because we're having the normal range of emotions in connection to that experience. And so if we were to say, well, if I'm not happy, then something's wrong with me, that creates, if you like, a faulty script. It's not wrong to be happy, but it's important to understand that emotions are a little bit like the weather. They come and they go. And it's more realistic to say, I am happy some of the time, but I have feelings of sadness sometimes, and I have feelings of anger sometimes. They're all part of a myriad of a healthy life, and I'm not only trying to be happy and push down any feelings of sadness or anger that might surface, because it's only good to be happy. That can be quite damaging to the people.
So in that, would you sort of say that it would be unhealthy to try and convince yourself that you are having a great day, that you are happy today, even though inside, deep inside, you know that it is a bit of a bad day, or it's an upsetting day?
Yeah, good question, Dave. I would say that it's healthier to acknowledge that you're having a tough day, but that this day will pass. And what do I need to do in order to help me go through this tough day? So acknowledging that not every day we're going to be happy, today's a tough day, what do I need to do? And that focus on well-being is where it really plays into what is well-being and how will that help us on days when we're not feeling so great. So apples for the mind, Tom Neamey, he has did a lot of research into this well-being and created a sort of a well-being wheel, and a bit like a bike with spokes to it. If we don't have all the spokes, the bike wheel will get knocked around a little bit. And he alluded to the fact that we need to have sections of this life well-being wheel, and things like a balance of our relationships, our biological health needs, our diet, sleep, hydration, exercise, our helpful thinking like psychological skills, how we manage emotions, fun interests, and our values and meaning and purpose. And this wheel is made up. And if we were to look at that and say, well, how am I going in the relationships section? If we have good connection with people and we feel we're not feeling isolated or alone, we might score quite high on that wheel. But if we're actually feeling quite lonely and isolated, we might be low on that score. So we might be from 0 to 10, we might be on the 3. And he purports that if we looked at that wheel and we actually measured honestly where we're sitting in all of these aspects of well-being, the areas that are low scoring, we can then go, right, what do I need to actually shift that up a little bit? So say, for example, diet and sleep. You know, if we're going, right, actually, I'm actually not sleeping that well and I've scored 3 on that for me. What do I need to do in order to help my sleep get better? Might be that I switch off my phone at a certain time in the evening. I, you know, don't look at work emails after a certain time. I have a sleep routine to have some good sleep hygiene. And then you measure it and you go, well, has it increased? Is my sleep improving? And that contributing to your well-being. Sitting there going, I'm not sleeping very well, never mind, and just keep doing what you're doing is not going to contribute to your well-being. We need to take action. Equally, say in relationships, if we are feeling a little bit lonely and we're not connected, you know, we haven't reached out to people, or, you know, we might have lost a partner, we might be feeling very sad and disconnected, and it might be that we might need to sort of engage in some groups that help us meet with other people to help that section of our well-being wheel to improve. And it's such a unique personal thing. We're all different. So we're not measuring that wheel against, oh, I need to be, you know, 10 out of 10 to be a perfect person. We're just saying, where am I at? And giving yourself the permission to say, these are 3 areas I'm going to try to work on in the next few weeks, builds up that sense of self-autonomy to say, you know what, I am paying attention to these things in my life. And that, as a product, then helps us when we're having those challenging days, because we need sleep, we need good nutrition, we need things outside of our work to make us feel fulfilled. They contribute to the whole feeling of well-being. And when we're not feeling so great and we feel our well-being is low, you know, we might have poor diet, we might not be connected, we might be feeling very, very stressed, we can feel so overwhelmed that we don't know how to kind of solve that problem. But it's by putting these simple sort of actions to help us increase in those areas that overall help our well-being. And they're available to all of us. It's not like, oh, only these people can do that. We're all able to do that, every one of us.
That is some fantastic advice there. Thank you, Dorothy, especially about looking after our well-being and making sure that we are honest with ourselves and honest with our friends, our family.
Yes, yes. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it, Dave.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning, Dorothy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was Dorothy Crosby from Rural Aid here on the Great Southern's Triple M.
It's Triple M Breakfast.
Getting your day going and feeling good.
This is Dave for Breakfast.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome in Associate Professor Nick Callow from Centre for Water and Spatial Science at UWA. Good morning, Nick.
Yeah, hi, David, and good day to all your listeners out there.
So I was talking earlier in the show about this new initiative, I suppose, could be that from WaterCorp. Now, any farmer with a dam, either for livestock or for farm use, will know that the evaporation of water at times can be very high, especially in summertime. But WaterCorp has been funded money for a new project that UWA researchers have been trialling over a 19-month period. This project consists of hundreds of thousands of plastic discs being placed on top of dams, and in an attempt to reduce evaporation levels amid critical water deficiencies. What can you tell us about the plastic material of these discs that's made from?
Yeah, David, they're made from a recycled plastic material, and they kind of form them into these hexagonal discs. And the broad idea of them is that they can kind of join together, and then they hold themselves covering the top of the water. And then obviously in doing that, they then reduce the evaporation and, save all that water from being lost to the environment and make it available for, you know, livestock or spraying, or in this case for domestic water supply or emergency firefighting and those sorts of applications.
So how do they work reducing the evaporation?
Yes, they're basically forming a cover. The key thing that drives evaporation on dams and any exposed water body, it's that wind blowing across the surface, and in particular really hot days and low humidity days have got a lot of potential for the air to absorb the moisture from the surface, and really it kind of disconnects the water body from the air. And, you know, any way that you can do that, these floating covers, there's a couple of different other products, a bit like swimming pool covers, and it's the same sort of principle. You're just kind of separating the water from the air to stop the evaporation.
So a quick little question without notice. If you've got, say, yabbies or other creatures in your dams, would this affect their ability to breathe and the water's breathing ability?
Yes and no. We haven't looked at the amount of, say, like dissolved oxygen that you get into the water. One of the interesting things we did find when we did the trial down at Wellstead with the Water Corporation, though, was we suspect it keeps a lot of the ducks off the water. So we actually saw some of the water testing results that we looked at, things like E. coli that's presumably coming in from water birds and things like that, actually decreased under the covers. As far as we could see, there was no decline in dissolved oxygen or issues like that. So, you know, they should be pretty environmentally safe for things like that. Obviously, very important that you don't lose your marin and yabbies from the dam.
Most definitely. So how efficient are they in reducing the evaporation?
Yeah, what we found when we ran this trial across sort of winter and summer with people from the Water Corporation and crunched the numbers, what we found out is that they were pretty much on that 75% reduction of evaporation. So it really depends a little bit on conditions. So things like a really windy day, they'll tend to get blown around a bit, but they're really quite effective. And you know, in this case, saved a huge amount of water. And for the Water Corporation, effectively, this is the difference between them needing to cut water into this location and avoiding it. And that's, I guess, why the Water Corporation's now looking to expand their trial so that they can better secure water supplies across the south of the state.
So would this method of evaporation reduction be beneficial for all regional farmers with dams or only for arid areas facing water deficiencies?
I think you've really got to think about different options that might suit people. So for some people, this could be a really suitable option. One challenge with this particular solution is that the cost is quite high. So for someone like Water Corporation and the value of drinking water and the costs of them carting emergency water are really quite high. So it can be an economic solution for them. But part of the work we're involved with through the Water Smart Dams project, we're actually looking at a range of different other sorts of covers. So we've actually got a few different growers out there at the moment who are trialling what are essentially very large swimming pool covers. And part of our work on that project will be to get some better numbers to understand, you know, what these different options. But certainly there are, you know, growers out there who are looking at these different options about trying to reduce evaporation so that they don't run out of water when we've had these, you know, these lean winters and then these hot, dry summers.
Most definitely. So where can farmers go to find out more information about this new initiative?
Probably the best place is if you have a look at the Water Smart Dams page. We've got a little bit of a gallery of some different sorts of technologies, and that's both evaporation covers and some of the other stuff we've been looking at, using things like subsurface drainage in areas where you might have water logging to harvest a bit of water, and also some clever stuff on using different sorts of surfaces for increasing runoff. So things like repurposed CBH tarpaulins or using plastic catchments that are really quite effective in running more water to the dam. So it's about growers looking at some of these different options and considering what's right for them and in which part of water supply and in farm water resilience they're going to look at in terms of pushing more water into a dam or trying to keep it, you know, in there once they've got it.
Always good to keep your options open. Anything else you think farmers should know about this?
No, I just really, really encourage people. You know, the partnership that we're working on is a really great example of learning from what, you know, those really smart and innovative growers are doing out there. And, you know, if people got some interesting examples of us, you know, reach out and encourage people to work through, you know, their local, you know, grower groups and other, you know, networks that they've got to, you know, work together and look at how they find solutions to making sure they've got enough water to run their farm businesses.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Nick. It's an absolute pleasure discussing this further with you.
Thanks a lot, David, and all the best to all the listeners out there.
That was Associate Professor Nick Callow, Centre for Water and Spatial Science at UWA.
It's Triple M Breakfast.
Getting your day going and feeling good.
This is Dave for Breakfast.
Time now to get those tummies grumbling. We're going to be catching up with Narrogin, the CWA Bill. Good morning, Lucy.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Very well. And yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
So this is a nice one for those that love a bit of savoury. It's the savoury chop recipe.
Yes, again, it is from a very old cookbook. I have used it and my family really enjoyed it.
So everyone else can enjoy it as well. What's the ingredients for a start?
So for this one, you will need preferably 4-quarter mutton or lamb chops, trimmed down with fat, etc. Then you need 3 tablespoons of plain flour and 1 tablespoon of sugar, salt and pepper to taste. 1/4 teaspoon of ground ginger, mustard, curry and spice. 2 tablespoons of tomato sauce and 2 tablespoons of vinegar. 1 cup of water or stock or gravy and a little parsley.
Oh, this is sounding very nice already. And then, so what do we need to then do to make it all together?
Combine all the ingredients, pour over your meat in the dish, a casserole dish, and then it says to let it stand for 2 hours and then cook, but I never had the time to that, so I just used to make it, the recipes up, pour the liquid ingredients over the meat and then cook. And cook in a low-moderate oven for probably an hour.
Okay, so it just simmers along nicely in the oven on a slow cook.
Yes,
yeah. Well, that'll make the meat nice and tender as well. Beautiful.
Yes, it does.
Is that a family favourite?
It was with the children, yes. Everybody hopped into that one and really enjoyed it. And if there was any gravy left over, well, that soon went too. So.
Excellent. So you make the gravy from the juices?
Yes, with the flour and that, it making its own thick sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if it's too runny for you, just take the meat out and thicken the gravy up as you would for gravy.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning and getting our tummies rumbling. That's probably a great one right there for anyone that's wanting some dinner ideas. Thanks for joining us this morning, Lucy.
Thank you. It's Triple M
Breakfast. Getting your day going and feeling good.
This is Dave for Breakfast.
Thanks for joining me on this catch-up. I look forward to your company again next week.